Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the And For If By Cyber show. We are celebrating the fact that NATO has decided there are four areas of operations that they have to be concerned with: land, sea, air, and cyber. And so this is where we are now. Warfare in the future will apparently kill our computers, perhaps our dishwashers, refrigerators, and garage door openers, but maybe not our children. Who knows? Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. Shelly Irving, still on assignment in Isaville. We expect to hear from her any day now.
Do we really? Isn't she just lost?
Well, I mean, I think being in Isonville is probably worse than being lost. If you're lost, you might be found. But if you're in Isonville, you're in Isonville. Actually, I apologize.
Is it that she can't get out, or we can't follow
her? Yeah, we can't. I mean, it's a,
we can't find her, or she, we can't get her out.
There's
of there.
A dome or something. I don't know.
To Leftovers, explain, right? Isn't that a movie? She's part of the Leftovers.
To explain here how to access the internet and give us a cry for help from the University of Kentucky, Interim Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right. Moorhead State Public Radio does have a website. Jump on over there. Find the show. You'll see a list of the most recent shows. Summaries there for you to kind of consume and see which one you want to listen to. Then once you get in, there's a link there. You can send it to your device. You can listen to it right there from whatever device you're on. Certainly, go in and listen to the show. Listen to it over and over and over. Listen to all the shows. We recommend you download them. Save them. They're going to be worth something someday. I mean, they are. They're going to be an antique at some point, right? Some of them sooner than others.
It's like the Hindenburg. You know, I mean, you know, you've seen that thing over and over again.
But it's still fun to watch, right?
No.
Well, I mean, but don't, when you watch it, haven't you disassociated the people and the death and all that? And
just wow, that's a pretty balloon fire there.
I know. Well, I mean, it really explodes.
Yeah.
No,
it does.
No, it was a tragedy. The certainly, you know, get the audio of the show from WMKY.org. After that, jump over on Facebook and tell us how crude and rude and totally socially unacceptable we are.
I mean, you got to say, a guy that thinks, oh, man, the Hindenburg. Ah.
Tony, I didn't grow up in all that. I mean, so to me, I've always just seen kind of like, I really never have seen the actual, I mean, just got a picture or two, right, that you kind of associate.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a pilot, that is kind of. Okay. Alarming. It is actually kind of alarming. I was trying to be funny, and you wouldn't let me.
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't let
but
me.
But I got to say, you know, if you remember Indiana Jones, you know, the guy that basically destroyed
sure.
pretty much every major artifact in civilization.
Yeah.
He had that.
He destroyed pretty much everything he touched.
Yeah. This guy was an absolute disaster.
I mean, didn't want him back. Germany didn't want him back.
He should have been banned from like half a dozen countries for destroying these priceless artifacts. But at any rate, there was a thing where he was riding in a Zeppelin, and I thought, and it looked extremely cool. It looked like riding in a Zeppelin.
Is that the second one or the third one? Second one.
Second one, at least.
Yeah, I think it was second one.
Yeah. Anyway.
This is where you would go to Facebook.com/HMRadioshow and tell us where was Indiana Jones on the Zeppelin. Right?
Yeah.
Because that's what the Facebook fan page is for. It's for you to leave feedback. It's for you to leave us hints. Tell us how to do the show better. Gosh knows we need it. But certainly interact with Health Matters. Again, you can find that Facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor for the second time, this is the second week in a row. This is important. The 6 dietary tips patients need to hear from their clinicians.
We got
to
do this again?
Yes, because you screwed it up with the Fruity Pebbles thing. So you're not allowed to talk about Fruity Pebbles.
You got to admit, you had some Fruity Pebbles last week, didn't you? Didn't you? You know you did.
No.
You thought about it.
Absolutely not. Well, I thought about it because you just wouldn't let it go. And so here you start up
you
again.
You like Fruity Pebbles, don't you?
Rule number one, choose foods with a wide variety of colors and textures in their most natural forms.
And even if patients as here, we established last week, that doesn't include ketchup and mustard.
And
I had no idea you were so anti-relish.
I don't like pickly stuff. I mean, frankly, it offends me when you put a pickle next to my sandwich.
But isn't it worse that
then you flavor the sandwich?
Pickle?
I want foods that keep their flavors to themselves.
But isn't it that it's a sweet pickle? If it was a dill, you'd be okay.
I don't know. I don't like foods that pollute other foods. And I find a hot dog to be a
onions?
Very tasty.
I mean, onions
thing by
pollute
itself.
Everything within 10 feet of them.
That's right.
They're terrible.
They are.
And they're white. They're not even good color.
They're not colored, and they pollute the other stuff.
Good. So we can agree on this. No onions.
Keep your flavor to yourself. Onions. That's what I say. You know, they need to do that. And pickles just bleed all over the plate. Please, you know, don't put pickles on my plate. Don't put them on my burger. I find that just annoying. I take a really
but
nice
you don't
sandwich,
mind a squishy tomato.
The problem is tomatoes are healthy, and so I got to put up with a tomato. I'm not, you know, I'm not enthusiastic about tomatoes, but I will eat tomatoes because they're not
bad. Because
it's
better than a green bean on your sandwich?
Yeah. I think that's a very apt analogy. And you know, I have trouble with this. I mean, the best way for me to eat vegetables is on a pizza. They're colorful. They're in their natural state. They're on a pizza.
Hey, they started off raw.
Yeah. And I think it's great. But at any rate, back to our sponsor.
We did this last week, too.
Choosing a wide variety of unprocessed colors and textures will make the most significant difference in your long-term health and longevity. So please don't walk away with a monochromatic plate. That's the thing we want you to know. Number two, avoid or dramatically minimize processed foods. I like the dramatically part. I just think of a person who says, be gone, you processed foods, and banishing them from the house. Processed foods or beverages, packaged snacks, smoked meats, that is, as we said, step away from the Slim Jim. White flour, sugar-sweetened foods and beverages, they should be not chewed but eschewed. And one study, 7.4% of all cardiometabolic deaths were linked to sugar-sweetened beverages, 8.2% to processed meats. So if you have a Slim Jim and a Mountain Dew, then you, in fact, have violated rule number two. Number three, choose realistic balanced diets for weight loss and weight maintenance.
What is realistic?
Well, I think the thing about realistic is the idea that I want to lose 10 pounds the first week, and I'm going to lose 60 pounds on this diet.
Okay. Is that unrealistic?
Yes.
Not if you have my weight.
I don't know what that means.
I lost 70 last year.
On a realistic diet last year. You did not lose 70 before spring break.
You know how much I lost the first week? 11.
11.
So there. Take that. Put that in your pipe and, you know.
One helpful rule of thumb is half a plate of vegetables, a fourth a plate of lean protein, and a fourth a plate of high fiber complex carbs, one serving of healthy fat. The thing is, the idea of a water and celery diet, for instance, you know, you're just going to, I am not going to eat again until I reach ideal weight. Not okay. A good move. You, in fact, you used to some type of prepared foods, right?
Some no.
Of
those, you no, fix it was your Weight Watchers.
Own. It was Weight Watchers.
Well, but okay. It wasn't their food. They just count the points of what I eat.
So you were busy calculating.
And I think at
points.
Times they lie.
And well, I think the well, let's see. The strawberries are okay, but they what was
well,
it?
No, any unprocessed raw fruit you can eat in unlimited quantities with 0 points.
Okay.
I mean, I can eat a whole pineapple. No big deal. Done. Checkmate.
Hunger solved. I like you said checkmate. I don't know what that means.
Hunger solved. Yeah, game over.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand
but
that.
But so they do they do that. It's weird. And I think what they've done is Weight Watchers is kind of weird. They basically take your overall daily points and they factor in the a portion of calories to fruits. So they basically, you know, your point values end up being, I think they just naturally assume you're going to eat so many since it's free.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a day goes by I don't have a banana or and like a banana for breakfast and an apple for dinner.
Right. And Fruity Pebbles are Avogadro's number.
Those
right?
are when I'm 6. In between.
6.03 times 10 to the 23rd, right?
Exactly. That's when I'm in between diets.
Okay.
The Fruity Pebbles really prop me up in between diets.
Gotcha. Okay. Number four, consume healthy oils for heart health. Fish, olive, avocado oil, also canola oil, walnut oil, flaxseed oil.
I am told that they use olive oil to cook my pasta. Does that count?
The problem is obviously with the pasta, right? I mean, if it's a light portion of pasta, the fact that you put it in olive oil is probably a good thing. It's healthy for your heart. It's certainly better than cooking it in lard and butter. We think. I'll put it that way. We think. In 2012, again, in this study, 7.8% of cardiometabolic deaths tied to low levels of omega-3 fatty acids, salmon, mackerel, certain other fish high in omega-3s. But if you can't get that, then you can use fish oil. Vegan and vegetarian patients, flaxseed, walnut, and chia seed oils, which are also considered healthy. We'll stop there. That was number four, healthy heart oils. We'll get more in our next fractional portion. That is our sponsor, the 6 dietary tips for your health. Now, this, again, fourth by cyber. This was June 14th in Brussels. NATO agreed to make cyber operations part of its war domain, along with air, sea, and land operations, and beef up the defense of its computer networks. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the decision to formally consider cyber operations a military domain is not aimed at any one country, certainly not at Russia. He says the allies need to be able to better defend themselves and respond to attacks on their computer networks. One thing you could do is shut down the computer networks and go play outside. I wouldn't say that to NATO, but that is one solution. Russian hackers have been blamed for a breach into an unclassified Pentagon computer network and a breach of NATO's computer network 2 years ago. He was speaking at their defense minister meeting. About a year ago, the U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter told NATO it must improve its ability to protect itself before it builds cyber war capabilities. The U.S. would help use our expertise, which is ironic at this point, a year later. We will help them with our expertise at protecting computers since we seem to – there is a possibility that our election computers were hacked in some way. NATO – in 2014, after years of debate, finally agreed that a cyber attack could rise to the level of a military assault and could trigger then what they call the Article 5 protections, where one country would try to help another. Cyber must be a war domain, says Stoltenberg, much like air, land, and sea. That means NATO will coordinate and organize efforts to protect against cyber attacks. This is the world in which we live now, that cyber, you can attack a country and prompt them to call upon their allies for defense by attacking their computer system. You know, certainly that can happen to your home. That can happen to your workplace. Rick, have you thought you're a veteran?
Sure.
You're going to reenlist now that they're doing cyber attacks?
I can't tell. I can't tell you.
You may have already done it.
No comment.
Well, I'm here in the studio with Rick Phillips, the top CIA, FBI operative.
Nope. You're misspeaking there. I'm not going to tell you what I know.
What if I tickled you? That wouldn't. No, never mind. Okay. Well, here's one. I mean,
so here's the thing, though, Tony. You're right, though. We do have another class of warfare, you know, or the cyber warfare. But I do think that unless there's some special circumstance, I think people's homes are probably not where the money is. And I think the one thing about cyber goes where the money is, right? That's where the, you know, yes, there's things that you can do, but a lot of times the worst cyber attacks, like these ransomwares that have been coming out in the last few months, they're really designed to make money, right? They're just a get-rich-quick scheme or a get-rich-slow scheme or a, you know. Interesting. It's going to be interesting to see where cyber goes over the next 5 years. Because, I mean, there's a lot of – we figure out the cyber, and then there's new cyber.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, we're going to be trying to protect everybody from our refrigerators.
Or I might use the refrigerator as an electrical shield. You know, I surround myself with refrigerators, and then I can hack from there.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't go after me because you would kill innocent refrigerators.
Right.
Or whatever.
Pretty much. I mean, you sound silly, but you kind of almost are right.
Because I mean, it's very similar to a terrorist activity because you can't go back and then eliminate the people who did this. The best you can do is protect yourself from it, but you can't go back and get even.
But wait till the cyber guys figure out how to use our refrigerators against us.
I feel like people are already using my refrigerator against me. I gotta say,
it's time to go to the refrigerator.
It is. It's time to take a break. We'll come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the And Four If By Cyber show. We are thinking back to Paul Revere, one if by land, two if by sea. Turns out three if by air, but the British did not attack by air.
Well, they might have thrown some rocks.
And they certainly did not attack by cyber, but that, in fact, is now acknowledged by NATO as a possible war front in the future, and one that NATO could invoke the Allies Clause. They could ask for help from their allies if they are under a cyber attack. Our sponsor for the second time, the six dietary tips patients need to hear from their clinicians. Dietary tip number one, choose foods with a wide variety of colors and textures in their most natural form. Number two, avoid or dramatically minimize processed foods, such as packaged snacks, smoked meats, white flour, sugar-sweetened foods, and beverages. Those are the things that we try to dramatically minimize. Number three, choose realistic, balanced diets for weight loss and weight maintenance. And interestingly, Weight Watchers was one of the diets that were recommended by this particular dietitian. By the way, this came from Naveed Saleh, who and she published this. I suppose it's a she published this on Medscape. Number four, consume healthy oils for heart health. That is fish, olive, and avocado oil. But also consider canola oil, walnut oil, flaxseed oil, or chia seed oil. Number five, forego red meat and live longer. Red meat, a principal source of protein and fat, research shows that its consumption is linked to increased risk of cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. A 2012 study, red meat consumption and mortality. These people followed almost 38,000 men. These were the health professional follow-up study, and also 83,000 women, the Women's Health Initiative. A period of 28 years, no heart disease at baseline. Consumption of red meat increased the risk for heart disease, cancer, and total mortality. And again, these associations, it's kind of tough. It may be that people who eat red meat also don't exercise it much. It may be that people who eat red meat are a little bit heavier or more overweight. There are lots of things that might be associated. But the general consensus is that red meat is not necessarily linked to good health. We think that it may cause some ill health specifically. And number six, the controversial one from last week, if you remember, consume fermented foods and probiotics and fiber for gastrointestinal and overall health. That is, I think the as I mentioned last week, the most important thing we want you to be aware of is foods are not simply a collection, an assortment of chemicals, the proteins, the carbs, the different types of cholesterol that your body absorbs. They are not simply a bundle of chemicals. They, in fact, they nourish certain germs in your gut. They have certain germs on them. Germs are not necessarily a bad thing here. We grow the right germs. We have the right germs, and we are healthier, we believe. So they were talking about yogurt, kefir, and I still haven't even looked that up from last week, and fermented foods and drinks can be taken in supplement form as well as just eating some yogurt. Probiotics contain non-pathogenic yeast and bacteria that lower your intestinal pH. They decrease the invasion of pathogenic organisms in the gut, and they modify your immune response, and so they help the human microbiome. And then they mentioned a couple of other tips, avoid alcohol or limit consumption. Now, the idea of avoiding alcohol, we've talked in the past about alcohol for cardiovascular health. Alcohol turns out to be a bad idea as far as cancer. Number of types of cancer are increased in people who drink. Actually, there is no reason to take up drinking alcohol for your health. If you enjoy drinking alcohol, and again, you drink in moderation, the risks are low, but it is certainly not a healthy habit to pick up. They recommend either avoiding it entirely or one drink per day for women, two drinks per day for men. That's their recommendation, and that is our sponsor, the six dietary tips patients need to hear. We're back to, again, cybersecurity, and this is one that strikes home as far as I'm concerned. This was from the June 23rd Miami New Times. A Miami man, Adrian Abramovich, accused of making 96 million illegal telemarketing robocalls in 3 months. Many of the people whose numbers were on the National Do Not Call Registry, which it seems to me, Rick, does not work, as best I can tell from my personal experience.
The Do Not Call Registry doesn't prevent people from calling. It gives you legal action to penalize them if they do. It's not that it says, okay, I'm blocking your number. It's the number's still there, but... You know, and so here's the thing. If you're in a country that doesn't have extradition or doesn't want to, you know, the U.S. can't really prosecute, you can't really stop that call from ever coming in, right? I mean, it's not like we run all the calls through a central, you know, repository and then say, oh, do not call list. Oh, we're not sending that one on. That's just not the way it works. So if somebody's willing to break the law, then you're going to get calls. And I routinely get a lot of robocalls.
And this one, the new technique they've got is they can spoof a local call.
Right.
This looks like it's coming from your area code. Maybe it's someone you know. It is not.
No, not at all. And until we digitize the entire phone system and get rid of all the analog that exists, which, interestingly enough, is more prevalent in Kentucky because of the poorer economy and the different, you know, there's not a lot of return on investment for beefing up the infrastructure in Eastern Kentucky, where your population density is very sparse, right? It's not as dense as a city. So, I mean, it makes it hard to update the infrastructure, which then means you can't put in the nice features that say, okay, no spoofing, or some kind of filtration to check where the call actually originated from. There's no real way to do that.
So we've got we get this call on a regular basis about we're their best customer and they want us to talk to us about a sure. vacation. I've received two calls from people who swore that I called them and I didn't.
Right.
So I assume that my phone number.
Well,
is
here's the thing. I think the do not call exempts people who you've called. Right. So if you were to actually accidentally say, yep, I called you, then by the do not call standards, they have not broken the law. You've essentially given them a get out of jail free card when you say something, or when you don't immediately acknowledge that you have not called them.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, I assume my number was spoofed by these calls because somebody says,
why would anybody want to call you?
I don't. That's a good question.
They clearly just don't know you. So, you know, I mean, if your phone rings, it's pretty obvious they don't want you.
Abramovich, apparently, one of the things he spoofed, his people would the victims would be told to press 1 to hear more about exclusive deals from TripAdvisor. TripAdvisor got wind of it, and they ran their own investigation, and they found that he was in Miami or near Miami, tipped off the FCC. The FCC says that they directed them to travel websites, which were not TripAdvisor. These were offshore places that would take their money. He apparently made over a million calls a day and, again, did the spoofing of the local phone numbers. And if it turns out, they also, if you press 2 to unsubscribe, that they won't let you unsubscribe, basically. You will continue to get phone calls from him. So he's about to get fined $120 million.
Ouch.
Yeah, that'll slow things down a little bit, probably drop him down below a million a day. Here's another, since we're gone into cyber, here's another one. This is for Rick. Rick's ignoring me right now. He's answering email, but I'm going to go ahead and talk to this. This was
I'm listening.
The 4th of July, the journal Nature, which originates in the United Kingdom and apparently has no respect for our Independence Day whatsoever, published an issue on the 4th of July. And on pages 13 to 14, they described a new Google spinoff called Verily Life Sciences. And Verily Life Sciences is working on now a 4-year, 10,000-person study to aim to find out how readings from smart devices can be combined with genetic tests and other data to improve overall health. We had, back before we understood very much about people's health, we had something called the Framingham Study in Framingham, Massachusetts. We tried to sign up pretty much everybody in Framingham, and we just followed them. We tested their cholesterol, their blood pressure, their sugar, and we watched to see what happened. And we found a lot of the links between high blood pressure and heart disease, between cholesterol and heart disease, from the Framingham data. And then we used that to decide, well, who should be on a cholesterol-lowering drug, what should be the targets for blood pressure, and so forth. And that was the Framingham Study. They're basically proposing a Framingham study for body monitoring, body function monitoring. We'll get a bunch of people. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of other NIH initiatives, and the idea is to get 1 million participants to wear devices and send their data in and do the genetic testing so that we have this data bank now of numbers for 1 million people. That's going to be a big honking data because you've got, again, these things are continuously monitoring dozens of variables.
Well, I think so you're building the devices is going to be a bit fun, too. I mean, that's a lot of devices.
Yeah. They mentioned one participant picked up 2 devices to monitor his heartbeat, sleep patterns, and a range of other body functions. And these are the type of things, again, you're going to be looking at body temperatures and heart rates and trying to figure out if you can predict when a person is about to get sick, if you can see an influenza epidemic ripple through a community, things like that by watching this data. Adrian Hernandez is a cardiologist at Duke. He says technology is really not the barrier. What we really need to understand is individual health and how it relates to these numbers. Project Baseline, they will wear the Verily proprietary study watch, transmit their heart rate, movements, and other information in the company's database. Another sensor below their mattresses, that's a little scary, mm-hmm. will monitor their sleep patterns. I would probably destroy the sensor in the first couple of days because I am a roller. I am a whirling dervish in my sleep. I wound up with the covers and quilts just wrapped around me, practically mummified by morning. genomic data, information on their feelings gathered through self-reported surveys, health records, family histories, and the results of laboratory tests. In-person appointments at Stanford and at Duke for these people, and then they're going to analyze it. $230 million from the NIH for the All of Us study in the current fiscal year, and that's part of their Precision Medicine Initiative. And so there have been some other smaller studies of what happens when you monitor people's health. But finally, we're getting to Framingham level. We're going to monitor an entire community of people, as I said, trying to get data on up to a million people so we can start to figure out how to apply this. I will tell you, I've said repeatedly, if you come in and you tell me that your average heart rate jumped by 5 points, 10 points, 15 points over the past month, I have no idea. There's nothing in any medical textbook telling me how to approach that. Do I get a CAT scan? Do I test your cholesterol or your sugar? I have no idea. I will ask you, well, does anything hurt? Have you had a rash? Have you had a fever? And I'll try to go at it the old-fashioned way. But honestly, I do not have a evaluation protocol for data that comes from wearable devices. You, meanwhile, Rick, are wearing wearable devices all the time.
Just one, my watch.
Yeah.
But it's a Fitbit.
It's a Fitbit. Do you still use that data? You did when you started. I mean, you were telling me about your sleep quality
all the time.
And so forth.
I mean, I was out in at the end of June in the Cisco annual conference. And, you know, it's a large venue, and it was 28,000 people this year participated in that. And it's in one of the big, you know, hotels in their conference center, the Mandalay Bay. And so there's just an awful lot of walking. Vegas is one of those weird towns where you can look down the street and go, oh, there's the place I want to go. And it's just right down there and you can see it, right? And then you start walking. And 2 miles later, you realize everything's really big in Vegas. And so I ended up getting an awful lot of walking in. And how did I check that? Well, every day I looked at my tracker and said, wow, you know, my actual walking was off the charts. You know, it was considerably higher, probably three times as high out there as opposed to being back here.
Now, listen to my words carefully because I'm going to ask you a question. I know you had certain targets set and mm-hmm. you use it to monitor those targets.
True.
Have you changed something, looked at the data and said, oh, my goodness, I've got to make a change since you got it? And what I mean is not that you knew that you – again, everybody knows they need to walk more, they need to exercise more and all those things. But have you looked at that data and says, well, based on this, then I need to do something different?
No, I think you know, I've never gotten to the critical mass of having to basically tell myself, oh, it's time to change something. I think, you know, one thing I think it opens your eyes to is I think it opens your eyes to your heart rate. And I think, you know, when you start digging into heartbeats, right? So heartbeats are an interesting thing. I think every human has a limited supply of heartbeats. And I think if the faster your heart beats, the faster you use those up, right? And so I think, you know, me seeing my heart rate be higher than, you know, say, you know, typically it's in the 80s, that's not good. It should be in the 60s. And so I'm using 20 beats per minute more than, you know, probably should be. And so how many years of my life is that trimming off? And those are the kinds of thoughts that cross your mind when you look at the Fitbit, right?
You know, that because doesn't sound healthy at all.
No.
To be thinking about every minute I'm 20 heartbeats closer to dying doesn't sound like the way
then,
you
then
live.
Then I could be.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so I don't know if that's a positive thought, Rick.
Well, but it's enough to inspire or it's either going to inspire you to do better or, you know, spiral you down into some crazy abyss.
Deep depression, yeah.
Well, or where you have cocoa, Fruity Pebbles on your pizza. I mean, it's going to do one or the other, right? You're either going to,
well, as long as I'm dying this fast, I might as well have some Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, I mean, look at it this way. My heart can process things faster.
Okay.
but no, so I think having the data, one of the things I think, you know, in IT, this is huge right now, Tony. I think, and you're seeing this in healthcare. I mean, it's pretty much in every industry. Data is driving everything. We're connecting so many devices. We have so much data, and we're finally starting to get the tools to where we can analyze the data and actually make decisions on the data. So I just think that we are moving to a data-driven society, and that can only filter its way down to the individual person, right? So at some point, your refrigerator is going to tell you you probably use more milk than average, or there's probably all kinds of things that we'll be able to trend and get data out of and compare ourselves to everybody else. And again, like this the study, was it the Framingham study, right?
Framingham, yeah.
Yeah. So there'll be a study at some point on data points on how we do certain things.
I feel like I need to keep another refrigerator offline, and it's because I don't want my refrigerator to know how much cheese.
Tony,
I'm
they call those coolers, right? You put ice in them. You don't hook them to anything.
When you cheat on your refrigerator, I mean that's.
I think you're going to see an age coming that where you have cameras everywhere, you have sensors everywhere. I mean, you know, the projections. So think about this for a second. There are between, I think they said some statistics that were cited at this conference I just got back from, between 2 and 3 billion connected devices today, right? So the history of mankind has gotten us up to, let's just say, 3 billion connected devices. When I say connected, I mean they're on the internet, right? They're projecting that connected device count by 2025, 7 to 8 years, is going to go to 100 billion. So it took us, you know, how many thousands of years to get to the 3 billion, and now we're gonna essentially exponentially grow that in 7 years.
I'm gonna dress in camo, hide in the woods, and eat Fritos.
You can't. We'll see you there. There are gonna be sensors there too.
It's somewhere. And so I want to eat my Fritos. Is that too much to ask? How many machines do I have to lie to? To get a bag of Fritos.
Just one. Yourself.
Myself. Okay.
And so, I mean, I do think that what you're going to see is the research is going to be in different. Some of these studies are going to be, you're just going to have new data points. We're going to be able to trend things like, you know, how bare are your cupboards? Really? I mean, because I'll actually have a digital inventory of what I have bought at my house.
It is conceivable.
Yeah, we'll be able to tell how many rolls of toilet paper per person.
We talked about the
and by think the way, about that for a second.
No, I would because I will tell you, I still remember I had a patient that I brought in the hospital. I put her on the very diet that I had recommended, and she insisted that she was following. And the second hospital day, she's crying, and she says, "Why are you starving me?" And I had no intention of starving or punishing her. I simply put her on the caloric diet that she and I had agreed upon and discussed in the clinic. And it turns out that we were wrong. The dietitian afterwards made a house call and basically threw out all of her stuff. And she said she did that once a month. She would come by our house and she would throw out all the snack foods.
All the Fruity Pebbles?
Yeah. And so this person was, you know, they said they did a certain diet, but they wouldn't. And you think about that, then there are two levels here. One is it may be that sort of like vaccination. It may be my duty to society to wear a watch.
Right.
Because my data point is missing, and we need that data connectedness to be able to see epidemics as they occur and to institute public health measures. And I am dropping out of society and endangering my neighbors by not wearing the watch. That's, I guess, one possibility. The other is being truthful with robots. I will have trouble being truthful with robots.
You'll lie to them?
Well, I test them.
Or you just not talk them?
Told you this. If I saw a self-driving car, I would cut it off just to see what it would do.
Thank you. That could be me.
I know it could be. It bothers me.
What kind of friend are you?
I'm sorry, but this is who I am. I mean, you see something like that, you want to poke it. I mean, you honestly see
So you see a bear?
From a safe distance, yes.
So when you're cutting in front of a car, where's the safe distance there?
Well, I'm not going to cause a wreck, but I do want to see if it responds.
Tony, you're terrible.
Probably so.
And you think me eating Fruity Pebbles is bad?
What's a machine?
You're going to cut off an automatic driving car?
I would not do that to a human being, of course. What
I
will
give you some time to think about this
is take a break. We're going to take a break. You should too. You're listening to Health Matters, and we're going to unfortunately starting our third fractional portion very soon. On Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the and four if by cyber. One if by land, two if by sea. Turns out in NATO's view, three if by air and four if by cyber.
Refrigerator. You really have a problem with this, don't you, Tony? This whole cyber thing and this data thing.
The refrigerators are attacking.
I mean, really, you have a problem with the fact that our lives are becoming connected.
Yes, because it means I'm connected to you. I don't want to be connected to you.
Sure. You can't help it. I'm already watching.
My whole life. I spent my whole life trying to create a safe distance. You're talking about poking things. I got a safe distance, and now it's all breaking down, falling apart.
But don't you think the data will help you do your job better?
No.
Why not?
Weird, isn't it?
Why?
Well, because we talked about this during the break. Here's the problem. When you get that data, people in high positions, and we can call them bureaucrats, and that's an insult, or we can call them regulators or whatever, they look at that data, and here's the problem. They look for things they can measure, and those are the things that we are governed by. And so unmeasurable things become unimportant. And I've spent my career doing unmeasurable things for people, and that disturbs me. If my diabetic patient has to have a piece of birthday cake, I try to find a way to get them a piece of birthday cake. It just blows the numbers right out of the water.
Right.
But they're happy because
they
got birthday
cake. What if
the
data suggests that a piece of birthday cake once a year is not a problem?
Well, see, the problem is that piece of information will not come out.
Birthday cake people, the people who sell birthday cakes will want that data out.
But when I look at quality measures, again, these are things that we can measure, and we don't have any exceptions. We were measuring our hospitalization rates, our readmission rates for heart failure. And we decided high-quality medical care, you don't get readmitted for heart failure. You get it right the first time. Here's the thing. People died more if they were not readmitted. So, you know, it's a number that you can measure, and so we rewarded and penalized hospitalization rather than keeping people alive. And in the same token, some people may want to eat that cake more than they want to stay alive for another 3 days or a week, and I'm okay with that too. I want them to be happy in their lives.
But that's called personal responsibility, and so what's happening is I can make an informed decision with data. It doesn't mean you are right. Somebody will probably bend and twist, and we'll go through a phase of humanity that the people that are in power or establishing social guidelines and rules will probably go one direction that's probably a little too far, and it'll be somewhat like a pendulum for a while, right? There'll be this reaction and then another counter reaction, and then it'll swing back and forth until it finally settles into something that's far beyond our lives, right?
I guess so. You know, I would be okay if machines held machines to numbers. And then as a human being, I could say, I don't accept that number. I want to make a change. I mean, if life ran that way, if the trains were all on time, but then in an emergency, you know, we could. But the problem is we can't come to any sort of agreement on those things.
No, and until then, though, but I think having data, when you're making a decision, sometimes, I mean, I think you can be a better physician when you have data to look at to help you make your decision. Now, that doesn't mean that you always have to say you can't ever have birthday cake. You can say, look, hey, this is a very special occasion for my diabetic patient. If you're going to have cake, make sure you do this or do that or do X. And don't abuse it, right? Don't eat the whole cake. Don't get the ice cream cake and the buttercream frosting. So I'm just saying it gives everybody more data to make a good informed decision. And decisions, you know, sometimes are just risk-based, right? I mean, everything we do in life has some element of risk to it. And when you make a decision, you're usually picking A over B, and we're kind of weighing the risk of A versus B, right? I mean, so that's the more data you have, the better you understand the risk you're taking.
I hear you. I don't think we're intelligent enough to use the data the way we should.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I don't disagree with you at all, but I think there are people that would rather have the data now, and we don't. Here's the thing. Should we hold ourselves to the highest common denominator or the lowest common denominator? So should we stop doing something because people don't understand it? Or should we continue to do it and give the people that do understand it more data?
We will ponder that for
Come on.
Well, again, somebody says, do you know, this killed 20,000 people last year? Well, no, it really didn't. But you can use the numbers and say that. And you can make a big case, and we've got to outlaw these things and so forth.
I can also look at a bunch of data on a piece of paper and go bet the five horse and still lose.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, I'm not saying the data makes it's just another piece of information that helps us make decisions. And obviously, I'm sitting on the side of my career depends on creating and generating and distributing the data, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm in. So obviously, I'm going to favor that.
I hear you. Our sponsor, Final Time, 6 Dietary Tips Patients Need to Hear from Their Clinicians. This data number is 6. They pointed out people can only remember about 6 or 7 things, so we're going to try to give you 6
There's
or 7
data
things
on that
to remember.
Too, right?
I know, there is. Naveed Saleh, who was on Medscape back on June 29th. This has been 2 weeks in a row we've done this because I like this sponsor. Six tips. Number one, choose foods with a wide variety of colors and textures in their most natural forms. Two, avoid or dramatically minimize processed foods. This is the packaged snacks, smoked meats, white flour, sugar-sweetened foods, and beverage. Those are the things we're trying to minimize. Three, choose realistic, balanced diets for weight loss. Don't try to lose weight simply by stopping eating or by drinking only water and eating celery. You want a diet that has high levels of vegetable and fruit intake. As Rick mentioned, Weight Watchers will allow you unlimited fruits. Consume foods that are high in fiber, whole grain foods. Increase your water intake. Don't get dehydrated on your diet. Yes, you can appear to lose weight by becoming dehydrated, but frankly, it doesn't really improve your health any. Drop your dietary sugar. Make sure you take in enough protein and healthy fats to allow your body to be healthy. One helpful rule of thumb, half your plate should be vegetables, a quarter is lean protein, and a quarter is high fiber complex carbs and some servings of healthy fat as well. Number four, consume healthy oils, fish, olive, avocado oil, also canola, walnut, flaxseed, and chia seed oil. Number five, forgo red meat. Tough to do. Appears from some studies it is associated. We don't know if it causes you to die early, but it is associated with higher rates of cardiovascular disease. And number six, consume fermented foods and probiotics and fiber for gastrointestinal and overall health. As we've mentioned before, consider these foods to be something you feed the germs in your gut rather than simply a bundle of chemicals that you absorb into your body. And then two other things I mentioned, avoid alcohol or limit consumption to one drink per day for women, two for men. Try not to substitute vitamins for actual foods. It's better to get the actual foods. That's our sponsor, our six dietary tips. Now, here is, this is good news and interesting as well. Americans keep having fewer babies. This is the National Center for Health Statistics. These provisional figures were released two weeks ago now. All births in the United States, they measured them. The total number of babies born in the U.S. last year, 3,941,109. That's 37,000 and change fewer babies that were born in 2015, a 1% decline in birth rates. Now, in order for a generation to replace itself, the total fertility rate needs to be about 2.1 thousand births per 1,000 women, 2.1 births per woman. That is, some babies are going to get sick, some are not going to live to adulthood. So you go a little bit over two per woman, and that works. U.S. has been missing that mark since 1971. That is, we are not having enough babies to replace ourselves. We have had immigration, which has taken care of this. Japan very strictly limited their immigration. They are aging rapidly. They're at a point where they're not able to replace their population. Here's the interesting part, Rick. Birth rates for women 30 and older hit their highest levels since the 1960s, getting pregnant later in life. In the 1960s, that is a key thing. Do you know why we reference back to the 1960s, the highest levels since the 1960s? In fact, birth control pills were marketed around 60 to 62. So basically, in the era of birth control, this is the highest birth rate for women in their 30s and older since we invented birth control. In 2016, there were 102 births per 100,000 women between ages of 30 and 34, highest since 1964. If you look at women ages 35 to 39, the highest since 1962. Women in their 40s, 11 births per 1,000. And for women in their 40s, that's the highest since 1966. So, again, since birth control became widely available, we have never had women in their 30s and 40s having this many babies. Meanwhile, birth rates for women in their teens and 20s, record lows in 2016, a new low, 20 births per 100,000 women between ages of 15 and 19. That's 9% lower than it was in 2015. It is 67% lower than it was in 1991. That was the highest teen birth year. Surprising. Well, I won't say surprising. I think career obviously is making a big difference here. We had on the show we initially thought, based again on observational studies, that older women would have babies that were not quite as intelligent, not quite, there was more risk to having that you might have a child that's not quite as sharp if you had them at an older age. The problem was they were looking at women that had multiple births and kept having births in their older age and following those kids. Now that they've got a chance to see women who are having their first child in their 30s and 40s, these children do perfectly fine. There is nothing we can tell wrong with having a child in your 30s and 40s in terms of the child's growth and development. Now, granted, it's a little bit tough when that child graduates from high school and you're about to retire.
You have a walker.
That's a problem. They may not get as much athletic help from you. That, again, there's a potential career in providing athletic training for kids of older people. They've got money. They don't necessarily have the physical health to throw a fastball or chase down a frisbee or things like that. So you can go and you could walk the dog or you could play with a kid and teach them sports. Maybe the kids don't need sports because they don't ever go outdoors because they're busy reprogramming the refrigerator. I don't know.
Well, they wouldn't have to reprogram it. They'd just have to empty it.
Could be.
You're never going to have a connected refrigerator, are you?
No.
Are you going to have a connected thermostat?
No.
So you don't really care if your thermostat and if you can get to it from anywhere in the world and turn it off and turn it on and have it learn your behaviors and use a cloud service so that it can get the intelligence,
Rick,
to deal with you?
Here's the thing about my behavior. My behavior may be that I go out and mow the yard and I get hot. And when I come inside, I turn the fan on. And then when I cool off, I turn the fan off. My thermostat doesn't need to know any of those things.
Well, it could do it for you.
I can turn the fan on. Click. It's on.
Okay.
This is not hard.
Don't get hostile with
me. Well, but the thing is, I don't need to preheat the fan or anything. I can just turn it on when I come inside and sit down and get some lemonade.
So Tony, you're a guy who likes to walk your property lines.
Yeah.
You don't think you'll ever have a connected drone that goes out and checks your property lines?
I hope not.
My biggest fear is there are
going to be drones flying over my house all the time.
Well, they may.
Yeah, no respect for my property
else. But what if you took your drone and you flew your property line once a week now instead of twice a year?
Rick, you know, I in a swimsuit am indescribably ugly. This is the reason why I bought all this privacy, is that I can take my shirt off and not expose the world to me.
Okay.
Well, you get drones and the video is going to get out.
What if it's your drone and you're
that video
using
is not
it to check your
out.
Property lines?
Yeah,
if you're using your drone to
attack the
drones? But
that's what I would do.
Do you ever inspect your gutters? If you had a drone to do that for
now,
you?
Now, I will tell you, I think I mentioned this before. My daughter, until recently, lived in Germany.
Right.
And they had a chimney inspector basically just sit down, pull a drone out, go up and inspect their chimney.
Right.
From the ground. It was a four-story building, and he just, on the ground, just ran the drone up.
Done.
Yep.
And so I'm just saying, I think you're gonna have more connected devices than you realize. You can only live in the Stone Age for so long.
I will not have a drone in my lifetime. Let me just say, hey, how about that? There's so you can come back and laugh at me when I'm happily using the drone.
You'll have a drone before we get taken off the air. You ready to take that bet on the air?
Yeah, because I feel like
I'm getting you for Christmas.
That assumes that the show will make it to Christmas. I doubt that even. All right.
I got 4 minutes.
I know.
Actually, technically, you only have two. So
okay, but I can work this out. This was something pretty – it was published on BMJ. It used to be British Medical Journal. They now call it BMJ, kind of like KFC.
Nobody wants to say fried?
Yeah, this was their – I don't know. It was British Fried Journal, I guess. But it was this was their open source journal on July 3rd. And they looked at proton pump inhibitors. This is Nexium. It's Prilosec. It's the purple pill. These are those once-a-day, very powerful stomach acid suppression medicine. And they looked at the U.S. veterans hospitals. They had data on the VA people, which ones and these guys get their medicine at the VA hospital, so they know who's getting these proton pump inhibitors. And they looked at them and they said, okay, if you get one of those pills, like the purple pill, or you get something like Nexium Protonix, the other proton pump inhibitors, what happens? I mean, we know if you block stomach acid, some bad stuff happens. You can't absorb B12. You can't absorb calcium. You can't kill germs that's in the food that you eat. And so you have a higher rate of pneumonia because you've got germs living in your stomach.
And well, now you've got a whole different bacteria mix, right?
Right, right. So these things, and the thing is, they're so widely used. You know that thing. Oh, if you want onion rings in the drive-thru, you just take a pill and you can have onion rings. And so many of us have heartburn and reflux and are on them. The other thing is we use them in the hospital to try to protect people from stomach ulcers. Now, we rarely see stomach ulcers anymore, but we still use them. And then they wind up getting discharged on them for no reason. They just are on them. So they compared them, and they looked over a period of almost 6 years. The people that took these proton pump inhibitors had a 25% higher risk of dying than people who took Zantac or Tagamet for their stomach. And if you looked, again, at the risk, even the people who just got stuck on them for no obvious reason, compared them to people who didn't take anything for their stomach, their risk was also about 25% higher, the people on these proton pump inhibitors. If you looked at people just started on them, their risk of dying went up as you stayed on them longer and longer. Now, this does not mean they cause death. And it may mean that people who are on these drugs are sicker than people who are off these drugs. But for whatever reason, things don't look good for these proton pump inhibitors. What they recommend is, look, if you don't need these drugs, you shouldn't be taking them. I mean, if you have a severe stomach acid condition, you should take them. But otherwise, you shouldn't. Meanwhile, we should probably get off the air.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Sean Delaney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org. Visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, just like these proton pump inhibitors, listening to Health Matters is linked to a higher risk of death.
Health Matters and proton pump inhibitors both reduce stomach acid and are available over the radio and over the counter.
Both can reduce your absorption of important vitamins and minerals by blocking stomach acid. They've been linked to long-term problems ranging from kidney disease and pneumonia to bone fractures and dementia.
Despite this risk, Health Matters is heard by dozens of people, and heartburn drugs are taken by millions of people in the U.S. every year.
Researchers in St. Louis compared the death rates among our listeners with people who listen to other radio shows and found a 25% increased risk of death among Health Matters listeners.
That's the same increase as they found between drugs such as Nexium and older acid blockers such as Zantac. That's one extra death for every 500 people.
Since Health Matters is rarely heard by 500 people, we're not too worried. On the other hand, proton pump inhibitor manufacturers and users should be worried. The longer you're on these drugs or the longer you listen to our show, the higher your risk.
If you are on proton pump inhibitors, talk to your doctor to see if you can stop them. If you are listening to Health Matters, turn off your radio as soon as possible.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.